Our next guest has been in the music industry for the last 45 years. From United Artists Records to personal manager of multiple artists, and most recently, a financial planner and investment counselor, Jimbo Merrill has been awarded a gold record for Crystal Gayle's Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue, and is currently CEO of Brainstem Financial, an entertainment business management firm. How's it going, Jim?
Hey, TJ. How are you? I haven't seen you for a while. It's looking good. You're looking good.
So tell me about this gold record. How do you get a gold record these days or those days?
Well, you know, you get lucky.
Okay.
It's the first thing. I was working at United Artists Records and happened to be working a number of artists, Kenny Rogers, ELO, War, some of the other artists, and country artists by the name of Crystal Gayle was coming out of our Nashville office. So she happened to release Don't It Make My Brown Eyes Blue, and I was working the record, and then the record became a hit. First it went up 100%, all the way up to number one country, then it crossed over to pop and went all the way up to number one pop. Sold actually 2.5 million units, though, so it should be a platinum record. There's a platinum and a gold, but somehow I got fired before I got the platinum record, so... You have to get lucky. So I did get it before I left.
When you said working that, you know, that tune, what did that look like?
No, I was a public relations publicist, if you will, or a media relations person for United Artists. So my job was to call Rolling Stone magazine and get them to put an article in Rolling Stone magazine about Crystal Gayle. For example, I got both Crystal and her sister, Loretta Lynn, on the cover of People magazine when that record was released.
Her sister is Loretta Lynn.
Yes, it is.
Like her blood sister.
Yes.
How about that?
Yeah, about a few years apart.
Yeah, okay. Cool. And both successful country artists.
I think you could say that.
Yeah, that's runs in the family over there.
Sure.
Very
does.
Cool. Okay, well, so Jim, I think we're going to discuss a little bit today about some music business. I hear that you've learned some things about this new music industry that we want to really share with some artists that may not really understand a lot of these new things.
It's changed 180 degrees from the 70s and 80s when I was in the business and won the gold record. Some of the terminology and some of the titles have remained, but it's really changed fundamentally from a business level, because now you have streaming. That wasn't even there then. Back then, they sold records. They sold actual vinyl records. Very few artists sell many vinyl records anymore or hard copies of stuff because everything is digitally loaded. So it's changed dramatically, but certain titles like personal manager and agent and business manager tend to have stayed there throughout all of the year.
So the industry has changed, but there's a lot of holdover from the old days that is just...
Right. And so some of the holdover is large record companies are out to steal money from artists. The mob was involved with them back then.
Mm.
Now they're just big international conglomerates that are willing to rip off musicians. But generally, the music business is there to go take advantage of all the artists that are out there and get everything they can out of them, yeah. Which is why you need a business manager.
Yeah. Which is what you were a personal manager, the same thing.
Well, the difference between a personal manager, that's a good distinction, because the business manager back in the day was the accountant, the guy that paid the bills, the guy that counted the money on the tour. He was the money guy.
Okay.
Personal manager was a loose title for somebody who is kind of like in the entourage and he's running the show and he's managing the artist personally, not business-wise. So that was a distinction before. Now, there is much more emphasis now on business management than there is personal management.
Yeah.
I had an artist the other day ask me, should I sign with a personal manager? And I said, well, what do you want him to do? And he said, I don't know. And I said, well...
Sounds like a personal problem.
Sounds like a personal problem. But if you're going to hire a doctor, you're hiring him to do something. So what I told the artist was, if you want him to work for you, ask him what he's going to do for you. And then pay him a fee, not a percentage. This whole 5, 10%, 20% being a personal manager of everything is out.
Yeah.
That's not cool anymore.
Yeah, and a lot of labels are taking a lot more these days, right? They're doing like 50-50 splits.
50-50 splits. They're not giving any money for advances anymore. Publishing companies are not giving advances for a songwriter. No, it's continued on.
Let's back up to that. Publishing companies aren't even giving advances for songwriters anymore.
Well, they are if you're a hit songwriter and your song's already been a hit.
Sure.
You might get like the country guy that just came out with that viral hit.
Oliver Anthony?
Yeah.
Rich Man.
He got offered $8 million.
Yeah. Really?
$8 million from a major record label, and he turned him down. No, he doesn't want to do it for the money. He's doing it for his other reasons. Well, so, you know, when you're a hit already, they'll give you some money just to sign you so they can steal more money from you.
Yeah.
I don't need to be that bad about the artist. Everybody wants to be signed to a label, and at some point you may need to. Because if you become an international star, you got to scale up.
Sure.
And when we get into, you know, PROs and collecting money in every territory across the world, it would be easier to have Sony or Universal or one of the big companies doing that. So they're still a viable source, but not until you get to a certain size.
Right.
Then you need to be globally scaled up.
Well, let's get into that. So there are some distinctions between, let's say, artists and songwriters, differences between, you know, recordings and the compositions. Let's get a little bit into this.
All right, we will. It's always good to start with vocabulary, especially in the publishing business, because it's very complex.
It's complex by design, yes?
Yeah, sure. The more money that's involved, the more lawyers that are involved, the more complex the transactions are going to become.
And the more
general rule.
A creative mind just throws his hands up in the air and says, I can't figure this out.
Well, hell, not just a creative mind. I mean, unless you got my background, you don't even know what you're reading. So let's get down to it. So what is an artist? That's the first thing I'm going to say. What is an artist? Artists record sound recordings. Rihanna is an artist. She did not write her song, Diamonds. So she's not the songwriter. She's the artist. A rapper is the artist. A singer is the artist. Typically, anybody who's on the cover of an album is the artist.
Can a band be an artist?
Yes.
Okay.
So then you have songwriter. It is what it is, right? Songwriter. Songwriters write the composition. Diamonds, for example, Rihanna's hit, was written by four songwriters. Sia Fuller, Benjamin Levin, Mikkel Erickson, and Tor Hermansen.
Four people I've never heard of.
You've heard of Rihanna.
I have indeed.
I would venture to guess that those four unknowns made a lot more money on that record than she did, especially over time.
Yeah. Because they get the royalties.
They get royalties. They own the song. So if Rihanna cuts Diamonds, it becomes a hit. The song is now cut by another rapper.
And
that becomes a hit. Another song, another writer, another artist just loves the song and wants to cut it her way or his way.
And every cover of a Rihanna song.
Money goes back to the writers.
Yeah. Okay.
The songwriter. So that's the artist and the songwriter. Now let's talk about sound recording. Some call this the master. It's actually the recording of the song, the mastered track. And then you have a section about composition, which is this is the song. So the composition is the song, not the recording.
The words and music.
This is where it gets complex.
Yeah.
A recorded master is not a song. It's a recorded master. So we're talking about the song, not a recording. Traditionally, publishing companies collect royalties for compositions. Songwriters write.
Yeah.
So then there's professional rights organizations. That's a whole nother section, which is how did this money get collected and given to the publishers and given to their artists? How does all this happen? Nobody knows because it's just like an ethereal thing. For example, the pro organizations in the United States most people know about, ASCAP, BMI, a smaller one called CSAC.
Yep.
And there's a brand new one for the last 5 or 6 years called GMR.
GMR.
GMR is Global Music Rights.
Global.
Basically, GMR is a private pro run by Irving Azoff and started by Irving Azoff, who signed and has been managing the Eagles from the beginning. He is inviting certain artists to be in his PRO.
Ooh.
You have to be invited to be in there. It is exclusive. I don't know much about it because I haven't got the details of the actual contracts with GMR. I would never suggest a new writer to go to GMR. I would suggest them to go to an ASCAP or a BMI.
Which are public entities?
Semi-private, semi-public. They're not actually publicly traded companies.
Sure, sure, sure.
But their companies have been around a long time. They have hundreds of thousands of songwriters. They're well-established. And either one of those PROs is a good firm to sign with if you're an artist. You only sign with one rights organization per country. So if I sign up with BMI, I can't sign up with ASCAP. So BMI is going to be my person group out there collecting the money and giving it to me. So that's what the PRO does.
So when you say collecting the money, this is for streams, this is for radio airplay, that's still a thing?
It is still a thing. There are still radio stations that are playing song.
Sure.
They have, every radio station, every TV station has to pay ASCAP or BMI a blanket fee every year.
Right.
So they have the rights to play those songs.
Mm-hmm.
So when they play them, then they know who to give the money to. So it goes to ASCAP or BMI.
And then BMI or ASCAP then takes
the money and takes the pie and looks at all the artists and say, all right, this is how the pie is cut. Now, that's the best part about digital and where it's gone from the old days. In the old days, these were estimates. We think that this record got this many airplays. We did surveys. We did this. We did that. And it's not an exact science back then to come up with the TJ Moss gets 28.3% of this.
Right.
Now, with digital streaming, there is a group called the MLC, which is the Mechanical License Cooperative. It is important because now, in 2018, the Congress actually did do something, which is kind of a surprise.
Wait,
all by itself.
Hold on.
Isn't it? They actually passed a law during COVID that updated the copyright laws.
Okay.
And nobody heard about it. Nobody even knew that they, nobody even thinks they ever do anything. So... So, total surprise, right? So, the MLC was born out of that law. So, what they saw was these streaming companies, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, anybody who's charging a fee and have members and they're streaming music, weren't necessarily paying for the rights to use that for the artist. So, the government got involved and says, no, 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 that's not right. Those guys should pay the artists for their stuff. By law now, Apple, Spotify, any streaming service must report to the MLC. They must report their digital actual data every month.
Streams.
So there's streams. How many Taylor Swift streams came through in this last month?
A bajillion.
That's an interesting word, but it is a bajillion. I mean, Billie Eilish had 900,000 streams in a week. So yeah, okay, bajillion. So now they have to pay, now every one of those guys just pay a 0.0006 cents of a penny for each stream. It's a tiny little piece. Where a lot of artists will go, oh, it's not worth anything. When you do 900,000 streams, it becomes real money.
It's not until it is.
Right, exactly. So if you don't have any streams, don't worry about it. But if you're getting songs that are actually being streamed and you're not signed up with MLC or you're not signed up with a publisher or administration, you ain't getting paid for your work.
Now, do you know if, say, an artist didn't sign up for this, but do they still keep?
No. No, well, they think about it. If MLC, if you sign up with the MLC in on August 22nd, they first heard about you on August 22nd.
Right.
But you did something in July that got streamed.
Yeah.
You're not even the contracted person. They would never find you. What they pay everything is late anyway. So when you sign on August 22nd, from that point forward, everything will come into your account.
Got it. Okay. So get on it.
If you do have streams,
you
need to either be signed with a publisher, so the publisher is your administrator and does all that for you, or you sign directly with the MLC. So if you have a sub-publisher agreement already, you don't need to sign with the MLC. MLC doesn't pay separately. Like ASCAP and BMI will pay for the composition and then they'll pay for the artist. The MLC pays just one to the stream.
Okay.
So they pay directly to publishers. So if you don't have a publishing agreement, you sign up individually, they will get you your money.
To sign up with the MLC, I think that's...
Well, that's critical. That's critical, number one. And number two, it's, by the way, it's free. This is the government saying you got to sign up here so you can collect your money. But it's also the government saying they can't take a haircut. They can't take a profit. It's your money. It's your royalties. So they actually did a good thing with the MLC. So it's amazing Congress could actually figure it out and do something nice.
Well... thanks, Congress. Jim, thanks for your time. We're gonna circle back and see you again, and we'll talk more about this biz.